Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article by Nelson Sanchez Pinto et al. Derivation, Validation, and Clinical Relevance of a Pediatric Sepsis Phenotype with Persistent Hypoxemia, Encephalopathy, and Shock. Objectives: untangling the heterogeneity of sepsis in children and identifying clinically relevant phenotypes could lead to the development of targeted therapies. Our aim was to analyze the organ dysfunction trajectories of children with sepsis-associated multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, or MODS, to identify reproducible and clinically relevant sepsis phenotypes and determine if they are associated with heterogeneity of treatment effect to common therapies. Design: multicenter observational cohort study. Setting: 13 PICUs in the United States. Patients: patients admitted with suspected infections through the PICU between 2012 and 2018. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: we used subgraph augmented non-negative matrix factorization to identify candidate trajectory-based phenotypes based on the type, severity, and progression of organ dysfunction in the first 72 hours. We analyzed the candidate phenotypes to determine reproducibility as well as prognostic, therapeutic, and biological relevance. Overall, 38,732 children had suspected infection, of which 15,246, or 39.4%, had sepsis-associated MODS, with an in-hospital mortality of 10.1%. We identified an organ dysfunction trajectory-based phenotype, which we termed persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock, that was highly reproducible, had features of systemic inflammation and coagulopathy, and was independently associated with higher mortality. In a propensity score matched analysis, patient with persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype appeared to have heterogeneity of treatment effect and benefit from adjuvant therapy with hydrocortisone and albumin. When compared with other high-risk clinical syndromes, the persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype only overlapped with 50% to 60% of patients with septic shock, moderate to severe pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, or those in the top tier of organ dysfunction burden, suggesting that it represents a non-synonymous clinical phenotype of sepsis-associated MODS. Conclusions: we derived and validated the persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype, which is highly reproducible, clinically relevant, and associated with heterogeneity of treatment effect to common adjuvant therapies in children with sepsis. Abstract 2 is a feature article by Williams et al. Follow-up after PICU discharge for patients with acquired brain injury, the role of an abbreviated neuropsychological evaluation, and a return-to-school program. Objectives: to present the results of an abbreviated testing protocol used to screen for neurocognitive and psychological sequelae of critical illness among PICU survivors with acquired brain injury in our post-discharge follow-up programs, and describe our process for facilitating this population's return to academic life. Design: retrospective cohort study. Setting: neurocritical care follow-up programs at two U.S. academic tertiary medical surgical PICUs. Patients: children greater than 4 years old enrolled in the neurocritical care follow-up program with an N equal to 289 at these institutions who underwent neurocognitive and psychological testing between 2017 and 2021. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 1 month after discharge from the hospital, nearly half of the children and or their parents, or 48%, in our neurocritical care follow-up programs identified some type of emotional or behavioral concern compared to their pre-morbid state, and 15% reported some type of cognitive concern. On evaluation, 35% of the children were given a new neurocognitive diagnosis. Neurocognitive domains regulated by the executive functioning system were the most commonly affected, including attention in 54%, memory in 31%, and processing speed in 27%. 1/4 of the children were given a new psychological diagnosis, most commonly post-traumatic stress disorder or stress-related symptoms, in 12%. Over 80% of patients in the programs were given new recommendations for school for both new academic services and new classroom accommodations. Over half of children, or 57%, were referred for comprehensive follow-up neuropsychological evaluation. Conclusions: Abbreviated neurocognitive and psychological evaluation successfully identifies the same deficits commonly found among PICU survivors who undergo longer, more complete testing protocols. When combined with services aimed at successfully reintegrating PICU survivors back to school, this focused evaluation can provide an effective and efficient means of screening for cognitive and emotional deficits among PICU survivors and establish a rationale for early academic support upon the child's return to school. Abstract 3 is a feature article by Thon Vo et al. Combined therapeutic plasma exchange and continuous renal replacement therapy in children with dengue-associated acute liver failure and shock syndrome, single-center cohort from Vietnam. Objectives. Pediatric acute liver failure is a fatal complication in patients with severe dengue. To date, clinical data on the combination of therapeutic plasma exchange, or TPE, and continuous renal replacement therapy, or CRRT, for managing dengue-associated pediatric acute liver failure concomitant with shock syndrome are limited. Design. Retrospective cohort study from January 2013 to June 2022. Patients, 34 children. Setting, PICU of Tertiary Children's Hospital No. 2 in Vietnam. Interventions. We assessed a before versus after practice change at our center using combined TPE and CRRT from 2018 to 2022 versus CRRT alone from 2013 to 2017 in managing children with dengue-associated acute liver failure and shock syndrome. Clinical and laboratory data were reviewed from PICU admission before and 24 hours after CRRT and TPE treatments. The main study outcomes were 28-day in-hospital mortality, hemodynamics, clinical hepatoencephalopathy, and liver function normalization. Measurements and main results. A total of 34 children underwent standard volume TPE and/or CRRT treatments with a median age of 10 years and an interquartile range of 7 to 11 years. Combined TPE and CRRT had an N equal to 19 versus CRRT alone with an N equal to 15, and combined TPE and CRRT was associated with lower proportion of mortality in 7 of 19 or 37% versus 13 of 15 or 87%, with a difference of 50% and a 95% confidence interval of 22 to 78 and a p-value less than 0.01. Use of combined TPE and CRRT was associated with substantial advancements in clinical hepatoencephalopathy, liver transaminases, coagulation profiles, and blood lactate and ammonia levels. All p-values were less than 0.001. Conclusions. In our experience of children with dengue-associated pediatric acute liver failure and shock syndrome, combined use of therapeutic plasma exchange and continuous renal replacement therapy versus continuous renal replacement therapy alone is associated with better outcomes. Such combination intervention was associated with normalization of liver function, neurological status, and biochemistry. In our center, we continue to use combined therapeutic plasma exchange and continuous renal replacement therapy rather than continuous renal replacement therapy alone. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation by Stenson et al. Fluid balance and its association with mortality and health-related quality of life, a non-pre-specified secondary analysis of the life after pediatric sepsis evaluation. Objectives. To evaluate the association between fluid balance and health-related quality of life among children at 1 month following community-acquired septic shock. Design. Non-pre-specified secondary analysis of the life after pediatric sepsis evaluation. Fluid balance was defined as 100 times the cumulative PICU fluid input minus the cumulative PICU fluid output divided by PICU admission weight. Three subgroups were identified: low fluid balance, less than 5%, medium fluid balance, 5 to 10%, and high fluid balance, over 15%, based on cumulative fluid balance on days 0 to 3 of ICU stay. Health-related quality of life was measured at ICU admission and 1 month after using Pediatric Quality of Life Inventory 4.0 Generic Core or Infant Scales or the Stein-Jessup Functional Status Scale. The primary outcome was a composite of mortality or greater than 25% decline in health-related quality of life 1 month after admission compared with baseline. Setting, 12 academic PICUs in the United States. Patients, critically ill children between 1 month and 18 years with community-acquired septic shock who survived to at least day 4. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 293 patients were included, of whom 66 or 23% had low fluid balance, 127 or 43% had medium fluid balance, and 100 or 34% had high fluid balance. Between food balance groups, there was no difference in pediatric risk of mortality score 3, with a median of 11 and a range of 6 to 17, age with a median of 5 and a range of 1 to 12, or gender with 47% being female. After adjusting for potential confounders and comparing with medium fluid balance, higher odds of mortality or greater than 25% health-related quality of life decline were seen in both the low fluid balance and high fluid balance groups. The low fluid balance group had an odds ratio of 2.79 with an interquartile range of 1.2 to 6.57, and the high fluid balance group had an odds ratio of 2.16 with an interquartile range of 1.06 to 4.47 and a p-value equal to 0.027. Compared with medium fluid balance, low fluid balance and high fluid balance had higher odds of greater than 25% health-related quality of life decline. The low fluid balance group had an odds ratio of 4.3 with an interquartile range of 1.62 to 11.84, and the high fluid balance group had an odds ratio of 3.29 with an interquartile range of 1.42 to 8. Conclusions. Over half of the children who survived septic shock had low or high fluid balance, which was associated with a significant decline in health-related quality of life scores. Prospective studies are needed to determine if optimization of fluid balance can improve health-related quality of life outcomes. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Cheng et al. Acute disorders of consciousness in pediatric severe sepsis and organ failure. Secondary analysis of the multicenter phenotyping sepsis-induced multiple organ failure study. Objectives. Acute disorders of consciousness in pediatric severe sepsis are associated with increased risk of morbidity and mortality. We sought to examine the frequency of and factors associated with disorders of consciousness in children with sepsis-induced organ failure. Design. Secondary analysis of the multicenter phenotyping sepsis-induced multiple organ failure study, or PHENOMS. Setting. 9 tertiary care PICUs in the United States. Patients, children less than 18 years old admitted to a PICU with severe sepsis and at least one organ failure during a PICU stay. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The primary outcome was frequency of disorders of consciousness, defined as Glasgow Coma Scale less than 12 and the absence of sedatives during an ICU stay among children with severe sepsis and the following. Single organ failure, non-phenotypable multiple organ failure, multiple organ failure with one of the PHENOMS phenotypes, including immunoparalysis-associated multiple organ failure, sequential liver failure-associated multiple organ failure, thrombocytopenia-associated multiple organ failure, or multiple organ failure with multiple phenotypes. A multivariable logistic regression analysis was performed to evaluate the association between clinical variables and organ failure groups with disorders of consciousness. Of 401 children studied, 71 or 18% presented with disorders of consciousness. Children presenting with disorders of consciousness were older, median 8 versus 5 years, with a p-value equal to 0.023, had increased hospital mortality, 21% versus 10%, and a p-value equal to 0.011, and more frequently presented with any multiple organ failure, 93% versus 71%, and a p-value less than 0.001, and macrophage activation syndrome, 14% versus 4%, and a p-value equal to 0.004. Among children with any multiple organ failure, those presenting with disorders of consciousness most frequently had non-phenotypable multiple organ failure and immunoparalysis-associated multiple organ failure, 52% and 34% respectively. In the multivariable analysis, older age and any multiple organ failure were associated with disorders of consciousness. Older age had an odds ratio of 1.07 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 1.12, and any multiple organ failure had an odds ratio of 3.22 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.19 to 8.7. Conclusions. One of every 5 children with severe sepsis and organ failure experienced acute disorders of consciousness during their PICU stay. Preliminary findings suggest the need for prospective evaluation of disorders of consciousness in children with sepsis and multiple organ failure. Abstract 6 is a special article by Edwards et al. Continuity strategies for long-stay PICU patients, consensus statements from the Lucile Packard Foundation PICU Continuity Panel. Objectives: to develop consensus statements on continuity strategies using primary intensivists, primary nurses, and recurring multidisciplinary team meetings for long-stay patients in PICUs. Participants: The multidisciplinary Lucille Packard Foundation PICU Continuity Panel, comprising parents of children who had prolonged PICU stays and experts in several specialties and professions that care for children with medical complexity in and out of PICUs. Design and methods. We used modified Rand-Delphi methodology with a comprehensive literature review, Delphi surveys, and a conference to reach consensus. The literature review resulted in a synthesized bibliography, which was provided to panelists. We used an iterative process to generate draft statements following panelists' completion of 4 online surveys with open-ended questions on implementing and sustaining continuity strategies. Panelists were anonymous when they voted on revised draft statements. Agreement of 80% constituted consensus. At a 3-day virtual conference, we discussed, revised, and re-voted on statements not reaching or barely reaching consensus. We used grading of recommendations assessment, development, and evaluation to assess the quality of the evidence and rate the statement's strength. The panel also generated outcome, process, and balancing metrics to evaluate continuity strategies. Results. The panel endorsed 17 consensus statements in 5 focus areas of continuity strategies: eligibility criteria, initiation, standard responsibilities, resources needed to implement, and resources needed to sustain. The quality of evidence of the statements was low to very low, highlighting the limited evidence and the importance of panelists' experience and expertise. The strength of the statements was conditional. An extensive list of potential evaluation metrics was generated. Conclusions. These expert and parent-developed consensus statements provide PICUs with novel summaries on how to operationalize, implement, and sustain continuity strategies for long-stay patients, a rapidly growing, vulnerable, resource-intensive population in PICUs. Abstract 7 is an online clinical investigation by Gelbert et al. Agreement between measured weight and fluid balance in mechanically ventilated children in intensive care. Objectives. To investigate the agreement between change in body weight and fluid balance and the precision and safety of body weight measurement in mechanically ventilated infants in intensive care. Design. Prospective observational study. Setting. Tertiary PICU. Patients. Infants following cardiac surgery at baseline, 24 hours and 48 hours. Interventions. Body weight and fluid balance measurement at 3 time points. Measurements and main results. Between May 2021 and September 2022, we studied 61 children. The median age was 8 days, with an interquartile range of 1 to 14 days. The median body weight at baseline was 3,518 grams, with an interquartile range of 3,134 to 3,928 grams. Change in body weight between baseline and 24 hours was negative 36 grams with an interquartile range of negative 145 to 105 grams, and change in body weight between 24 and 48 hours was negative 97 grams with an interquartile range of negative 240 to negative 28 grams. Change in fluid balance between baseline and 24 hours was negative 82 milliliters with an interquartile range of negative 173 to 12 milliliters, and change in fluid balance from 24 hours to 48 hours was negative 107 milliliters with an interquartile range of negative 226 to 103 milliliters. In Bland-Altman analysis, the mean bias between body weight and fluid balance at 24 hours was 54 grams, with a 95% confidence interval of 12 to 97, and at 48 hours was negative 43 grams, with a 95% confidence interval of negative 108 to 23. This exceeded 1% of the median body weight, and limits of agreement ranged from 7.6% to 15% of baseline body weight. The precision of paired weight measurements performed sequentially at each time interval was high, with a median difference of less than or equal to 1% of body weight at each time point. The median weight of connected devices ranged from 2.7% to 3% of body weight. There were no episodes of tube or device dislodgements and no change in vasoactive therapies during weight measurements. Conclusions. There is moderate agreement between the changes in fluid balance and body weight, albeit greater than 1% of baseline body weight, and the limits of this agreement are wide. Weighing mechanically ventilated infants in intensive care is a relatively safe and precise method for estimating change in fluid status. Device weight represents a relatively large proportion of body weight. Abstract 8 is an online clinical investigation by Beggs et al. measuring energy requirements of traumatic brain injury patients in pediatric intensive care with indirect calorimetry, a comparison with empiric methods. Objectives: energy requirements following moderate or severe pediatric traumatic brain injury, or TBI, have not been fully elucidated. Indirect calorimetry is the gold standard for measuring resting energy expenditure in PICU. However, technical complexity limits its use. We aim to determine whether measuring resting energy expenditure differs from standard of care energy estimation and delivery in a cohort of pediatric patients following moderate to severe TBI during PICU admission. Design: retrospective case series study. Setting: single center, 16-bed general PICU in Canada between May 2011 and January 2019. Patients: children 0 to 18 years old admitted to a PICU for moderate to severe TBI and had an indirect calorimetry study performed while mechanically ventilated. Moderate TBI was defined as Glasgow Coma Scale or GCS score of 9 to 12, and severe TBI was defined as GCS of less than 9. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. During the study period, 245 patients were admitted with the diagnosis of trauma with TBI. The study includes a convenience sample of 26 patients with 23 severe TBI and 3 moderate TBI who underwent a total of 34 indirect calorimetry measurements. Measuring resting energy expenditure varied considerably from 29% to 144% of predicted energy expenditure. Using Bland-Altman comparative analysis, neither Schofield nor World Health Organization predictive equations were in agreement with measuring resting energy expenditure. Only one measurement revealed that the patient was appropriately fed, meaning energy provided in nutrition support was within 10% of measuring resting energy expenditure. 10 or 38% of measurements revealed overfeeding, and 15 or 58% revealed underfeeding at the time of testing. Conclusions: the present study adds to the small body of literature highlighting the limitations of predictive equations to evaluate energy requirements following moderate to severe pediatric TBI. Indirect calorimetry, when feasible, should be used as the preferred method to orient PICU teams to feed such vulnerable patients. Abstract 9 is an online clinical investigation by Evans et al. Emergency Interhospital Transfer of Children to PICUs in the United Kingdom, Qualitative Exploration of Parents' Experiences of Retrieval Teams. Objectives: each year in the United Kingdom, there are around 5,000 interhospital transfers of critically ill children into PICUs. There are few published descriptions of what this experience is like for parents. The objective was to describe parents' experiences of the interhospital transfer of their critically ill child to a PICU. Design: qualitative in-depth interviews. Setting: 24 PICUs in England and Wales. Participants: parent interview participants, N equals 30, were purposely sampled from a larger pool of parent questionnaire respondents to create a sample diverse in child's age, presenting medical illness, retrieval team, and whether a parent traveled in the ambulance. Measurements and main results: open-ended, semi-structured interviews using topic guides to encourage parents to describe their experiences of transfer. Interviews were audio recorded, transcribed verbatim, and thematically analyzed using framework analysis. Parents' perception of transport staff as confident and competent through observation of clinical care and positive communication experiences during the transfer process were related to feelings of trust and being supported, as well as relief from distress. Parents varied in their needs for conversation and support. Parents who did not travel in the ambulance had fewer opportunities to interact with the transport team and experienced different challenges in the period prior to their child's admission to the PICU. Conclusions: retrieval teams can influence how parents experience their child's emergency transfer to the PICU, offering parents proximity to knowledgeable staff. Satisfaction may be related to matching parents' needs. Understanding parents' needs and optimizing opportunities for effective communication between parents and staff are beneficial to parents. Abstract 10 is an online clinical investigation by Raitt et al. Trends in childhood oncology admissions to ICUs in Australia and New Zealand. Objectives: there are few robust national-level reports of contemporary trends in pediatric oncology admissions, resource use, and mortality.
We aim to describe national-level data on trends in intensive care admissions, interventions, and survival for children with cancer. Design: cohort study using a binational pediatric intensive care registry. Setting: Australia and New Zealand. Patients: patients younger than 16 years admitted to an ICU in Australia or New Zealand with an oncology diagnosis between January 1, 2003 and December 31, 2018. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We examined trends in oncology admissions, ICU interventions, and both crude and risk-adjusted patient-level mortality. 8,490 admissions were identified for 5,747 patients, accounting for 5.8% of PICU admissions. Absolute and population-indexed oncology admissions increased from 2003 to 2018, and median length of stay increased from 23.2 hours, with an interquartile range of 16.8 to 62 hours, to 38.8 hours, with an interquartile range of 20.9 to 81.1 hours, and a p-value less than 0.001. 357 of 5,747, or 6.2% of patients, died. There was a 45% reduction in risk-adjusted ICU mortality, which reduced from 3.3% with a 95% confidence interval of 2.1 to 4.4 in 2003 to 2004 to 1.8% with a 95% confidence interval of 1.1 to 2.5% in 2017 to 2018, and the p-trend was equal to 0.02. The greatest reduction in mortality was seen in hematological cancers and in non-elective admissions. Mechanical ventilation rates were unchanged from 2003 to 2018, while the use of high-flow nasal prong oxygen increased, with an incidence rate ratio of 2.43 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.61 to 3.67 per 2 years. Conclusions: in Australian and New Zealand PICUs, pediatric oncology admissions are increasing steadily, and such admissions are staying longer, representing a considerable proportion of ICU activity. The mortality of children with cancer who are admitted to the ICU is low and falling. Abstract 11 is an online clinical investigation by Bergerat et al., Visiting Policies and Parental Presence During PICU Admission, a survey in French units. Objectives: to describe the policies about parent visiting and involvement in care during admission to French PICUs. Design: a structured questionnaire was emailed to the chief of each of 35 French PICUs. Data about visiting policies, involvement in care, evolution of policies, and general characteristics were collected from April 2021 to May 2021. A descriptive analysis was conducted. Setting: 35 PICUs in France. Patients: none. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 29 of 35, or 83% of PICUs, replied. 24-hour access for parents was reported for all PICUs responding. Other allowed visitors were grandparents in 21 of 29, or 72%, and siblings in 19 of 29, or 66%, with professional support. Simultaneous visits were restricted to 2 visitors in 83%, or 24 of 29 PICUs. Family presence was always permitted during medical rounds for 20 of 29, or 69% of PICUs. Most of the units rarely or never allowed parental presence during the most invasive procedures, such as central venous catheter placements, in 18 of 29, or 62%, and intubation, in 22 of 29, or 76%. Conclusions: unrestricted access to the PICU for both parents was available in all responding French units. There were, however, restrictions on the number of visitors and the presence of other family members at the bedside. Moreover, permission for parental presence during care procedures was heterogeneous and mainly restricted. National guidelines and educational programs are needed to support family wishes and promote acceptance by healthcare providers in French PICUs. This concludes the abstracts for the October issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.